I'm Kathleen Dunn, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest this hour has written a very interesting piece about this work-life balance. We've heard that phrase so often. And she suggests that there is equal time for work and for personal life, family, friends. The reality is that it's more of an ebb and flow. The demands on our time and energies are different every day. If we take the word balance out of the discussion, so many more possibilities open up, and you find a way to make your life more open and whole. Dr. Shyla Mergane is our guest this hour from the School of Medicine and Public Health at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Her clinical interests are individual and couples psychotherapy, patients with mood anxiety disorders, sports psychology, and peak performance training, and pre-surgical psychological evaluations and treatment of patients with a variety of health problems. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Dr. Mergane, and obviously we've heard this phrase so often, that there's something going on in all our lives with work-life balance. We're working tremendous numbers of hours. I think if you're a mom, a lot of the responsibility for child care falls to you. It's not 50-50 yet, and so you're working and you're running to soccer games and to school conferences, and I mean, it can be just pretty darn exhausting. So we're going to talk about why we live this way and what does it mean if you take the word balance out of the conversation. Interesting. And we'll welcome your phone calls. We always do. Here's how you reach us, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter at K Dunn Show. Thank you, Shyla Mergane, very much for being with us. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen. It's great to be a guest on your show.
Thank you. It's really nice to have you here. Let's just talk about how we're all spending our days before we talk about taking balance out. It seems to me that we're just overdoing it. I mean, and particularly women, when I had children at home and working full time and taking care of your kids and making dinner, and oh my gosh, you just never had time to sleep. It was hard to think of balance because how could you think of anything except what you had to get done?
Exactly. We're really seeing a rise in rates of stress in our country, and burnout and depression and stress are even becoming worldwide epidemics. In a sense, we're having to juggle way too many things with not enough time. And there's that myth of a superwoman or a superperson,
right,
where we expect to have to do it all, but that can really lead people to feel like they're failing at various tasks.
What do you make of this need? And I'm wondering if it is because we are on our computers all the time and we have smartphones all the time. It is so easy, and it's kind of addictive, too, to have this little device with you, so you're always checking to see either what's going on in the world or if you've got some work message that somebody's giving you and it comes in at 9 o'clock at night or 10 o'clock at night. Can you just go ahead?
Yeah, many people find that they're constantly plugged in. And on average, the amount of email information we get in, as well as searching websites or trying to keep up with social media, that's just extra work for people.
Mm-hmm.
So putting that on top of managing, whether you're a stay-at-home mom, the childcare responsibilities and household tasks, to people who are working and have the home life, to just the work responsibilities, you know, you're adding probably another extra hour of work a day on top of an already busy schedule.
Right. And for those of us who are in this business, there's really a temptation to watch television sometimes to see what's going on. For the first time, I must say, I had family coming in this weekend, and it was wonderful to see them. And I was so incredibly upset by the amount of and lack of solid information on the Ebola crisis. I just said, that's it. I'm turning off the television. And I did until last night. And I got to tell you, I felt better.
That's great, Kathleen. You unplugged, and you know that is one of the ways to create that sense of flow as well. Because those emails or texts or television commercials coming in, it's kind of an example of, in life, it can feel like things are grabbing at our attention,
right,
saying, this is important, this is important, and we get into a reactive space versus that sense of flow of really stepping back and saying, no, this is really important, and listening to ourselves and our own values and priorities.
You have written that we live in a culture that really defines success by how much money or power we have. If we work hard, we can often earn that success, but the price we can pay is the connection to ourselves. Let's talk about that a little more. Is that really what motivates many of us, that how much we make, how powerful we are is an indication of how worthwhile we are?
No, absolutely, and a lot of society has been driven that way for the past 20 or 30 years. But the sense of finding work-life flow is really to take a step back and value our sense of well-being and to look at how are we caring for ourselves throughout our lives, because if we don't take care of our well-being, often other areas of our life don't go as well, and certainly our home life, our friendships, or even our work life suffers. And we're just less happy as well.
Yeah. So what do you mean by taking care of ourselves?
Everything from the type of self-care activities that we're doing to, when I talk about work-life flow, stepping back and really identifying what are some of our deepest values. Am I living life in the way that's most important to me? And am I prioritizing doing the things I love and recalibrating things so that it feels more in alignment with really how I want to live my life. And often if we're caught up in all those day-to-day stressors or in that sense of reactivity to the email coming in first thing in the morning, we start to lose touch with that. And the technology has so many benefits, but I think one of the disadvantages is it kind of takes us outside of ourselves, focusing on this screen or device or television set and not necessarily fostering that quiet space that we need to really make sure we're in alignment with where we want to go.
Yeah. Do you, when you take on each day, do you think about what you need to do, what you want to do, what you have to do? Do you structure your days?
That's a great thing, and I've been seeing a lot of people, and this is something I'm trying to do, of starting the day more intentionally. One of the things people often do is check email first thing in the morning. They check their data, and that gets us in a place of reactivity, of responding to what's coming towards us. So if we can take 10 minutes to do either some quiet breathing practice or meditation, or even just set an intention for the day of this is how I want to show up at work or for my family or in those friendship interactions, it really gets us back in the driver's seat of life versus really feeling bounced around by those influences or forces of life.
So you talk about when you look at the day, there's often time that we have that we need to be more mindful about. Mm-hmm. Where is that time? What is that time?
Mm-hmm. And it's going to be different for everyone. But I often encourage the people I work with to take those 10 minutes in the morning when you first wake up to reflect on what's most important, your values, or even the tasks you have in that day, and be intentional about the ways you want to show up, the kind of person you want to be in there. I mean, just take those 10 minutes, and then the experiment is, how does your day go? Are you happier? Are you more productive? Do things flow better? And usually the case is people say yes. Now, sometimes the 10 minutes in the morning is impossible if you have a young infant child at home or you have some urgent thing you have to rush off for. So often at the end of the day can be a nice way to reflect on the day at bedtime, reflect on how it went. Do I need to make some changes? What can I learn from what didn't go well or what forces pulled me off course? To just make sure we're staying back on track, to get back on track. I think about this as a bowling alley and putting bumpers in the gutter lanes so we don't get a gutter ball. We kind of have those checkpoints to make sure that ball or our life force is moving in the way that we want it to.
Mm-hmm. And you remind us, and I'm always amazed to hear how many people don't take their vacation time every year. Mm. How incredible. And you don't realize it until you're into week two of the vacation, I think, when all of a sudden you realize what it is like to be relaxed. It's a whole different feeling in the body, isn't it?
It really is, right. And you look at other cultures that give employees 6 weeks vacation, and many Americans only get two. So we certainly need those vacation times. And if you can take a week or preferably 2 weeks, it can really recharge you in ways you can't even imagine. And I'm a big fan of even just micro breaks during the day. About an hour ago, I stepped outside and got some fresh air for just 5 minutes. So whether you need to walk outside for some fresh air or walk around the office or even doing some stretch breaks at home if you're a stay-at-home mom. But we know if we're in one position for too long, our energy plummets.
Right.
As well as, you know, if we're in, for example, a position for too long, that's the number one cause of work-related injury, is being in one position for too long.
So how was it outside?
You know, it was beautiful.
Those
fall trees are just glorious right now. It's really a kind of kaleidoscope of color out there.
You know, and you remind us in the article that not only do we not take vacation, we don't even do lunch, most of us.
Mm-hmm. No, we are kind of a culture that's gotten in the habit of checking email or returning voicemails during the lunch hour while eating at our desk.
So, yeah.
You know, if we can leave the desk and go someplace else to eat, it can just make that second part of the day go well. And I'm also a big fan of creating that transition time between, if you are working, between work and home, to intentionally kind of let go of that work day and fully arrive at home, whether it's just sitting in the car and taking a few breaths or listening to some relaxing music while you're navigating rush hour traffic.
Mm-hmm.
But it can allow you to be much more present. And really, we find that if we're in the moment, whether at work or at home or with family or friends, that we're enjoying it more. And I always say the greatest gift we have to give is our own presence, our time and attention. But if we're not taking those micro breaks, we tend to be more burnt out or exhausted and scattered and less emotionally available.
Yeah. Let's talk about women particularly. You talk about women being particularly vulnerable to perfectionism, which makes what you just laid out difficult for women to do. Why are they vulnerable to perfectionism? Why are we? I'm a woman.
Sure. So if you look at how both genders tend to cope with stress, stereotypically women tend to internalize stress, that they beat themselves up, they're hard on themselves. Men tend to externalize it, you kind of take it out on others, lash out on others. So that tendency for women to take it out on themselves or beat themselves up means that they can expect themselves or have that pressure to be better, and that can lead to that sense of perfectionism. But it's quite dangerous for women, because when we are internalizing stress or perfectionistic, we have a tendency to ruminate over what we're not doing well, how we should be better, and that is part of the reason why women are more vulnerable to depression and anxiety, more so than men. And that can really set women up for that sense of feeling like a failure, or they're not doing enough or not enough. And I think that is part of why, back to what you were saying earlier, if we take balance out of the equation, I think it really frees people up, because it implies that there's not some perfect thing we're supposed to accomplish, this perfect balance mm-hmm. equation, but instead it's really it's such a personalized approach, and it's going to change each day. So I think there's much more flexibility and much more creativity, and more space opens up to really define and create your life in a way that feels uniquely valuable to you. Because truly, there's no one right way to live. There are, you know, millions of different types of solutions for people. So what's most important is, at the end of your life, did you live the life that you wanted to live and that felt really important to you?
Right. Well, let's take some phone calls. Here's how you reach us. We're talking not really about work-life balance, but we're talking about taking the balance out of the equation. And if you do that, how do you examine your life? What kinds of changes can you make? And what might be beneficial to you? Do you feel this stress? And I think it's really a common thing that we're on email all the time, or working, sitting, and we're guilty of that here. We bring our lunch and we're at the computer and taking a few mouthfuls and never really taking a break during the course of the day. But there are a lot of demands on everybody's time. And what do you do about that? And what do you do? I think that's an interesting way that the doctor put it. At the end of your life, you want to feel that you accomplished much of what you wanted to accomplish, and you feel pretty peaceful about it. So how do you achieve that? Our guest is Dr. Shyla Mergain, and she is from the School of Medicine and Public Health at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. She wrote a piece that caught our attention, which we'll put on our Facebook page if you'd like to see it, Tips for Moving Beyond Work-Life Balance and Finding the Flow. Here is our number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter. We're so plugged in, which is kind of contrary to what we're talking about. But, you know, we'd love to hear from you. So give us a call. The Twitter is @KDunnShow. Just don't do it after 5:30 for the show. Just take a break. To you in just a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Dr. Shyla Mergain is our guest, and let's go to some phone calls, starting with Nancy in Mukwonago. Hi, Nancy.
How are you?
All right. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Enjoying North Central Wisconsin at the moment.
Good.
I just think that, you know, people, you know, you think back to when, you know, let's say in the 50s, you know, they went to work, came home, you had family time. And early in my career, I was definitely, you know, you want to get up that ladder and you want to work and you're, you know, you're doing employees reviews while you're on vacation, and you're not really taking that time. And I've just learned after doing that for 10 years, you know what? You wake up in the morning, you go for a run, you work out, you do something for the family, for yourself, whatever. You go to the work, you check in, you give it a good, honest 8-9 hour day. When you leave, you're done.
Right.
Yeah, some things at work, and but you know, people just don't shut off.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's almost. I don't think it's good. I don't think it's good for people. I don't think it's good for the family.
Shyla, what do you say?
Yeah, you know, fantastic, Nancy, and great to hear how you made that change after 10 years of climbing the corporate ladder, so to speak. And that sense of flow, of creating that sense of flow between work and family life is really about being present. So if you're at work, be at work. But then if you're at home, really be at home. And if, as you're talking about, Nancy, if you're constantly checking your phone while making dinner, while interacting with your children are going to notice, or your spouse is going to notice. And you're not going to be as available, and you may miss some of those moments. You know, kids really need one parent's attention and full attention of really noticing what's going on, and that's part of what helps kids thrive and develop that sense of emotional stability and sense of self, of really being seen or heard. So if we're constantly checking our devices or work email, we're not going to be offering that as much and probably not enjoying the family time as much as we would if we weren't just fully more present. So it can be quite challenging. I think work and those emails really pull us in, and we kind of get this instant feedback by getting that message and responding. Mm. But so many families are turning to turning their phone off or even making it a family affair, because we're seeing teens really struggle with this as well.
Oh, yes.
You know, we're seeing teens sending thousands of texts each month, and we wonder what is that doing, one, to their developmental brain, as well as teaching them how to be more mindful and just content with doing those old-fashioned family activities. So I think parents can model this themselves by turning off their phone. And really, I know people, they have their cell phone station where all the teens and parents are turning it off and plugging it in and then focusing on dinner and doing homework and maybe some family time mm-hmm. together.
And Nancy, I'm just interested, I assume that before you made this change, you put in your solid 8 hours or 9 hours and then would go home and do work as well. Where is that coming from? Do we feel like somebody's going to fire us, or we're not going to be noticed? Or what is that that makes us go crazy with the amount of work we do?
Well, I think, you know, I mean, depending on what profession you're in, I mean, there's times when you're caught up in too many meetings, so you can't get your day-to-day stuff done. So you need that extra
right.
either time before work when it's quieter, I prefer to go in earlier than stay late.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I'm more productive in the morning than I am in the evening. But I'm at that age where it's not so much my kids or kids, it's taking care of aging parents.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't understand. She's 92. My mom doesn't understand if I'm, you know, checking my emails or something. Like, is that more important than me?
Right.
You know?
Right.
So, I mean, it's the same thing, whether it's a child asking you that or your mother asking you that. You gotta put the line in the sand and say, you know what? It's family time.
Mm-hmm.
And your employers really need to send that home.
Mm-hmm.
If they want productive, happy employees.
I think
it's important.
Right.
And Nancy, it's great to hear you talk about that line in the sand or having some boundaries around work time. And I think our culture, in a sense, convinces us that we're human doings, that if we do more, somehow we'll lead a more successful life and that will create happiness. But I think creating this sense of flow is really bringing us back to being the human being versus a human doing and finding those creative solutions at work. By you going in earlier, it sounds like you can be a lot more productive with some of those tasks that get harder to do as the day progresses and you get into meetings. And so people often have to prioritize things at work or get creative or talk with their boss about different ways of doing things or even delegating more, whether it's at work or even at home, to create a little more white space or downtime to once again get back in that driver's seat and making sure we're taking action in those things that matter most.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to dig a little deeper here, too, Dr. Mergane, about are we rewarding people at work who do put in, you know, 12 hours a day, who are always available? Are those the people who get the promotions, who get the good job, and then everybody feels compelled to live up to those standards? Is that what's going on?
I think in part. I think there's fear with a recent recession and downsizing that if we're not working those extra hours, we will lose our job. But that is not necessarily what gets people ahead. Working more isn't necessarily what drives advancement. I think it's working better or more creatively and working smarter and making sure that you're doing those projects that have that visibility or that allow you to best use your talents. Because if you are overworking, you may be vulnerable to making those mistakes or being more irritable, and all that actually takes you away from that overall goal. And I do know some companies are now really encouraging employees not to check email, you know, in the evening or on weekends. And some companies have gone so far as to even turn off email.
Really?
So it'd be nice to see some of those moving in that direction
mm-hmm.
more.
Nancy, thank you very much for your call. And best of luck with your mom. I mean, she just brought to mind how important those times are, too, to just sit and talk to your 92-year-old mom. I mean, what's more important than that?
Yeah, it's a very precious time, Nancy.
Yeah, it sure is. Thanks, Nancy. Jean in Williams Bay. Hi.
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 Hi. First, I want to say I really liked what the doctor said about when you're home, be at home, and when you're at work, be at work. Because
mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, in that kind of mindfulness behavior of really being where you are is a stress reducer rather than being where you are and thinking about where you should be or where you're going to be or whatever.
Yeah, good point.
But what I wondered is do you hold with the evidence that the neuroplasticity part of the brain really is benefited and can happen if you do more mindfulness, more meditating, more praying, that kind of thing, so that when, you know, forget about the balance part, but whatever it is we're doing and whenever it is we're doing it, we can mitigate any kind of stress that might be in our lives and challenges.
Absolutely, Jean. That's a wonderful question and something I'm quite passionate about. So there was research published in Science that showed, they call them TUTs, task-unrelated thoughts, that when our mind was wandering, we experienced less happiness. So they rated people, they to ask people in the moment, what are you thinking about? And if their mind was wandering, not engaged in the actual task, they reported less happiness. Versus if they were really absorbed in the task, thinking about it, they experienced greater positive emotion. And the field of neuroplasticity is fascinating. And as I mentioned earlier, women were quite vulnerable to rumination. And so we can actually, instead of ruminating, rewire our brain. Some of the research on mindfulness meditation shows that in as little as 8 weeks of doing a more formal mindfulness practice of 20 minutes a day can actually change the structure of our brain and build more gray matter in the prefrontal cortex, which is that area associated with attention, focus, and emotional reasoning and decision-making. But we find that even small practices of mindful moments of, you know, when you're at home, be at home. When you're washing the dishes, wash the dishes.
Yes.
And fully be in the moment with that can, in a sense, rewire our brain to, we're basically priming the brain to practice focusing and attending. And I think that's why although the technology has wonderful, wonderful benefits, if we're constantly responding to the email that's coming in or the text that's coming in, we're in a sense strengthening that distraction part of our brain versus that mindful practice that I think there's really a mindful movement going on around our country, which is so exciting to see. We're really strengthening that part of the brain to attend and be present. And we find that really helps lower stress, and it creates more emotional resiliency, and it can boost our mood as well.
Yeah, I'm an executive director of a not-for-profit counseling center, and it's amazing how all of my therapists are incorporating this into therapy, particularly for depression and anxiety. It really makes a difference in the speed at which people recover, because I think that prefrontal cortex really, I mean, it's just like building up any muscle. It really seems to enhance people's ability to just cope with things that come at them.
Yeah, it's wonderful to see what they call the third wave movement in the field of psychology, of more mindfulness incorporated into so many treatment modalities. But we find that mindfulness really allows us, instead of getting into that reactive autopilot way of responding to stressors, it actually creates some space so we can pause and have much more intention around how we want to respond. And when we're talking about finding work-life flow, that skill is valuable because it means that we're keeping on track or making that adjustments back to staying the course with where we want our life to go.
Thank you, Jean, so much for your call.
Thanks.
Yeah. Bye.
Yeah, thanks, Jean. Wonderful question.
Mm-hmm. More phone calls, and here's how you reach us if you would like to, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, or our email. It's okay, you can do it. It's only 236, so you can send an email, talk@wpr.org, and we're on Facebook at The Kathleen Dunn Show. Our next call is Suzanne in Appleton. Hi, Suzanne.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
I'm wondering if it's just going to get worse. I was a mom stay-at-home mom for 12 years, and I have 3 kids, and they're all in school right now. But I took a job that allowed me to stay at home. I do graphic design for magazines across the United States.
Mm.
But I never leave my work. My work is with me through the weekend, through the nights. I get emails. You know, if it's from California, I get emails up until midnight. And, yes, I do turn these off, but for me, it's difficult because I feel the pressure of trying to help the family by working. I chose this kind of career so that I could still be with the kids and care for them and pick them up after school and all those kinds of things. I'm wondering if this is where we're going to, because my job is now non-traditional, but it seems that a lot of companies might be moving this way where they're hiring freelancers or, you know, people who are off-site.
I do think that there is a rise in companies looking to either allow employees to work from home or hiring independent contractors. So there potentially is a trend in that direction. And I think, as you said, it becomes challenging that if one is working from home, there is that tendency to want to show that you are working. And so responding to that email that comes in at midnight, there may be that pressure to do that versus if one was in an actual office setting where you leave and drive home. Once again, having those good boundaries around that workplace, and it could even be saying, okay, I'm going to check email for an hour in the evening at 9 p.m. after I put my three children to bed, maybe a way to navigate that. But I do think it becomes stress-producing, and we can pay a cost to our health if we're constantly plugged in and just responding when that email comes in. And even in the workplace of having that time, I've been experimenting personally with this recently, of having that time where I'm responding to email in the morning and the afternoon versus just responding when that email comes through. And we actually find we're more productive, and we go through those emails much faster when we have that chunk of time set aside for that.
How do you keep yourself from wanting, because there is something about the process of knowing it's there instantaneously that you want to look at it. So how do you keep yourself from doing that?
Some people will actually turn off their email so it's not coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Or on the smartphone of actually turning off that feature so you actually intentionally have to go in and check it. And I think it's about the kind of the larger context of those things that drain our energy versus build our energy, because we want to try to manage or conserve our energy throughout the day so we have some energy left over for our family, for our children, for our spouse. And so often that constant email checking is something that slowly drains our energy, like a battery being drained by it. And so building in some things that can build in that gain or increase our energy are really important.
Thank you very much, Suzanne, for your call. And Joe on Facebook says, wow, is this really how corporate life is for people? I don't experience that. I take relaxed lunches, never take work home. Life is too short. When you die, you're going to say you wished you spent more time at work. You only live once. Reject and disenfranchise any job or boss who says your family needs to go on the back burner. Unacceptable. My boss is awesome about being flexible. Of course, I am an hourly contractor, so if I don't work, I don't get paid, but I'm also flexible to work when I want to.
That's a wonderful, Joe, and I just loved what you wrote. That's really powerful and fantastic, and I think you are a nice model of what is possible, and it sounds like you've had good discussions with your boss about valuing that family time. And and my sense is part of why you are doing so well as an hourly contractor is you are taking those breaks, so you probably have a lot to give when you are in that work mode.
Yeah.
So keep it up.
Laurel in Waupaca, hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Uh-huh.
I want to say that I, for many years, worked weekends and at home at night, and I think part of it might be because my father, who I adored, really instilled in me in a very strong way that it didn't matter how you screwed up in life, as long as you went to work in the morning when you were supposed to be there, then you were a good person.
Aww.
And everything was okay.
Aww.
And he passed away in 2008. And I think I've started to realize that his work ethic was different than mine, because he wasn't expected to work at night. He wasn't expected to work on the weekend. It was a very different thing. There was loyalty from the company and loyalty that you showed your company. It's very different now. And during those years, I amassed about 11 weeks of vacation, which I am just now starting to take. And I want to let you know that I am on my way to a sheep and goat farm for 2 days just to have fun.
Oh.
And taking the whole week off. And it makes such a difference to just take a day or an afternoon whenever I want to. Now I have so much time that I can do that. And I'm glad I amassed it, but I think I should have been doing it all along.
Oh, well, it sounds like you're going to have some fun this week.
A sheep and goat farm. I love it. And it
absolutely
sounds, just for the pure fun of it, right?
I'm a writer. Yeah. I'm taking a few days off just to do that, so I don't have to think about anything at home. So
good. Sounds like a way to recharge. And Laurel, you bring up such an important point that I think a lot of listeners are going to relate to, this work ethic that I sometimes call the Midwest work ethic or the Wisconsin
uh-huh.
work ethic. We're our farming community, you know, many coming from a lot of dairy farmers, that sense that we work 7 days a week, and unless the work is done, we can't relax. And so many of us are in kind of recovery from that and giving ourselves permission
right.
to take those few days just for the pure fun of it, the pure joy, because at the, you know, at the end of our life, that's often the things that we remember the most, not how many hours of overtime we've worked, but those
right.
ways.
Right, and your good
that,
memories are, I really don't have that many good memories of work. It's just
work.
I didn't daydream about that wonderful day at the copier or whatever I had.
But I sense you're going to have some memories you're going to gain from these upcoming days at the farm.
Definitely.
Thanks, Laurel, very much for your
Thank
call.
Thank you.
Yeah. And we welcome more phone calls. Here's how you reach us. What we're talking about is moving beyond work-life balance. And it's the focus of an article that our guest this hour wrote. It's on our Facebook page if you'd like to read all of it. Dr. Shyla Mergane is here. She's from the School of Medicine and Public Health at UW-Madison. She does individual and couples psychotherapy. She works with patients who have anxiety disorders, mood disorders. She does sports psychology, peak performance training, and pre-surgical psychological evaluations. Interesting. This being constantly on, how do we take, she talks about this work-life balance, that the concept is somewhat misleading, that there is equal time for work and for a personal life. The reality, she says, is that it is more of an ebb and flow, and the demands on our time and energies are different every day. So if you take the work balance out of the discussion, many more possibilities open up, and you'll find a way to make your life more open and whole. What do you think? Have you done that? Are you struggling with that? Why don't we do that? Why are many of us moving in the opposite direction where we got all these messages coming all the time and we have to respond and we got to work at night and we have to work on weekends and we're exhausted by everything? What do you think? So there are lines open for you now. 800-486-8655 is the number. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Frank in Madison, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you, Frank?
Good, I'm enjoying the program.
Good.
I'm curious, I seem to always have music playing in the background. If I go out on a bike, I have music. If I go out on a run, I have music. If I'm washing the dishes, I have music. Is too much music, specifically from a smartphone, a bad thing? Or do we need more music in our lives?
You know, I haven't heard of any studies saying too much music is a bad thing. And there was an interesting study that came out in a top pain journal showing that any kind of music actually has pain-reducing benefits. So many people find that music boosts their mood, you know, kind of puts a spring in their step, and potentially, you know, it can even lower levels of distress. And certainly if there is a more of a physical pain issue, there can be benefits to music.
Okay. So always having the smartphone on playing music isn't necessarily a bad thing.
I don't think so. I think if you were watching music videos constantly, then I may say something, you know, too much screen time. But just having those tunes, it sounds like it's helpful and may, you know, as I said, some people even find it helps boost their energy and makes them more productive.
I've found, especially while I'm running, if I make the conscious decision to run without music, I think my mind is clearer and I'm able to observe more of my environment.
Mm-hmm.
But conversely, when I run with music, I think my activity and my heart rate, if you will, is it goes up. I get more out of the run. So
yeah,
I'm trying to find that balance, which is not easy.
Yeah, and that's a great question for yourself of what are the, when I'm listening to music, what impact does that have on the activity versus when I'm just with natural noise. And some people do like, you know, I think it is nice to unplug from whatever from time to time, whether it's music or, as we've been talking, definitely unplugging from the texts and emails to just get back in the natural environment and listen to those natural noises.
Mm-hmm. What do you
can imagine you mixing it up.
What do you listen to, Frank? What do you listen to?
Everything, except for rap or country.
Mm-hmm.
But, while we're on the topic, I found that if I listen to opera or classical, it's easier to focus on my environment, or if I'm listening to electronic music or rock music, it's a little more, it demands more of my brain to focus, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, and it's a question, Frank, it sounds like that you're asking, what do I gain by listening to music in various tasks? But the other question is, what am I missing out on? You know, am I missing out on hearing those birds chirping or hearing the leaves flutter down in the wind that I don't want to miss out on from time to time? So in that case, maybe some balance there, if we use that term balance, may be appropriate.
Hmm. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Frank.
Yeah, thanks, Frank.
Susan in Menominee. Hi.
Hello.
Yeah, hi, Susan.
Hi. I'm a retired teacher, and I just wanted to make 2 points. For one thing, since our collective bargaining was taken away, we did have in our contracts, we had, and I think a lot of school districts did in Northwest Wisconsin, had 30 minutes of duty-free lunchtime. Now that that is, you know, that's not in place anymore, it's not firm in place, so we get assigned lots of different, you know, sometimes we don't even have a lunch hour. And also there is, our prep time is usually when the students have, I'm talking elementary here, when the students have like music or phi ed, which is less than 45 minutes. Well, if you want to run to the bathroom and back, and then you've got a stack of papers, bringing work home is a given. You have to do that. So I think that's something that's really affected, taking away the collective bargaining has really affected, public education teachers as far as stress load. And just one more quick point I wanted to make is that I can't speak for other professions, but in education, it's almost like it's a badge of merit if you can say, well, I came in and worked for 3 hours on Saturday, or I didn't get out of here until 6 o'clock, or I don't take my personal days.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's almost like you're a lazy or a bad person.
Mm-hmm.
If you use your time that is allotted, that you can take off.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll take the comments off.
Thank you, Susan. Yeah, she makes an excellent point. I'm sure that resonated with a lot of people who heard that. A lot of people say that, you know, and then you feel, oh, my gosh, you really work hard. Am I working hard enough?
Exactly. And, yeah, thanks, Susan, for all your years of being a teacher and educating our young people. And I know a lot of teachers are really struggling with how do I get the prep time or all the paperwork done and the school allotted time. Right, and I think some cultures, corporate cultures or school cultures or work cultures can get into that more is better. Yeah, and it's like bragging rights. Oh, I came in all weekend and worked all weekend. And it's easy to get hooked into that. And sometimes we can have this underlying belief, oh, I'm not doing enough or I'm not enough, that I think can hook us into that overworking. And so to step back and have that place of reflection around what is really important, how do I want to show up, is so critical because it allows us to step out of that kind of programming into really am I working effectively and with as much attention and care as possible during the hours, and what kind of time do I want to commit, and can I give myself permission to set some boundaries and step away from work to really enjoy the rest of my life.
Eric in Madison, hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was wondering if my question actually relates to the last couple of callers is maybe if you could address some strategies to balance the sort of work versus family. Work versus family, you know, issues that, I mean, I find myself waking up in the middle of the night thinking about work at 3 in the morning and I can't go back to sleep and the stress level that I have because I'm constantly thinking about work when I should be thinking about my family.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, I'm just wondering if you had some advice and some suggestions on how to, you know, strategies, I guess.
Yeah, great, Eric. And that's a great question, and I bet a lot of people can relate to that waking up in the middle of the night and worrying about work and not going back to sleep. And it highlights it may not be an email coming in that's disrupting family life, but just an intrusive thought of thinking about work when we're home. So when we're talking about...
I can't turn my brain off sometimes when I wake up at 3 in the morning.
Yeah, and certainly after a stressful day at work, we're, you know, as I said, we kind of arrive home and think about work. So one, having that transition, whether it's sitting in the car for a few minutes doing some breathing or listening to music, to have that transition, leaving work at work and trying to arrive more fully home and be present. But as I was talking earlier about setting intentions for the day, we can set intentions for our home life. We're often very planned at work. We have meetings or certain tasks that we want to have done, but we don't bring that necessarily to our home life. So I'm a big fan of a date night with a spouse, of actually planning that in the calendar so you have that one-on-one time, hopefully not talking about work, even not talking about children, but really trying to connect with each other. Also planning time with each child is really, really important. That really fills a child up to have your complete time and attention. And then even, once again, we talked about vacations, planning those family vacations, preferably when you can unplug, or just planning some activities that you can do together as a family that really are memory maker moments and kind of creating some of those beautiful family moments together. Because I think if we're, once again, in that place of reacting to family time, of just whatever's coming up and the latest problem of the day, we miss out on those opportunities to really create that nourishing and that rejuvenating time where all family members are really enjoying themselves.
How do you deal with, I'm sure that what Eric described has happened to all of us, that you wake up at 3 in the morning and you just can't turn your brain off, that you may as well skip the rest of the night's sleep because you become obsessed with something that has happened at work, and goodbye sleep.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do about that?
Yeah, so a couple things, and this is the field of sleep hygiene, that I'll sometimes have people imagine a box, that they put the thought in the box and they'll close the lid on it. And if they're still thinking, actually getting out of bed, getting a glass of water, going to the bathroom, sometimes can help reboot the brain. And I guess lastly, if those thoughts are still there, not to make a big deal about it. You know, there they are, kind of like flies in the room buzzing around, and then trying to either not take them, not get so hooked by them, or trying to refocus our mind, practicing some deeper breathing or even some guided imagery can really help calm. I always say to sleep, we need a calm body and a calm mind. So some of those types of things can be really helpful.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Eric. I hope that was helpful. Andrea sends this message. I'm currently a full-time student and full-time employee. Both my professors and my employer feel that they should come first. That puts me in a position where I don't have a choice and I have to be multitasking. Part of what makes focusing on one task difficult is the immediate response that a lot is expected with modern technology.
Andrea, and people can relate to that the employer wants you to come first or that your teachers want you to come first. But when we're talking about work-life flow, it's so important that you say to yourself that, you know, I come first. And that multitasking, we actually find if we're multitasking, we're often less productive. So even if we're jumping from task to task, half an hour at a time, half an hour at a time, that mindfulness and trying to just really be present with what you're doing often makes one more productive.
One more phone call. We have less than a minute. Meg in Rochester, Minnesota. Hi.
Well, hi. Thanks for taking my call this morning. I'm curious about what we could learn from other countries. Occasionally, I hear very interesting studies about depression internationally or something like a happiness index, and how much higher many other countries score above us. And I'm wondering what your experience with that has been, your observations, and what we could learn from them and how we could begin to shift things here along those lines.
All right, we have about 30 seconds. I'm sorry, Shana.
Yep. Yeah, Megan, I grew up overseas. We always say in Europe people work to live while Americans live to work. So I think it's, you know, putting that focus back on our life, that we're much more than our jobs or our productivity or even our financial health, and really back to that, you know, looking at how we're caring for ourselves and our own well-being. That is our biggest asset that we need to keep at the front and center of our lives.
Mm. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Holland and London, actually.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, yeah, for a total of 8 years. But I'm American and originally from Chicago.
Oh, nice. Well, thank you so much. I feel more relaxed just talking to you. It's been a good
hour. It's been a pleasure, Kathleen. Yeah.
It has been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me on your show.
Our guest, Dr. Shyla Mergane, she is with the School of Medicine and Public Health at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and her piece that made us think we should have her on the show is Tips for Moving Beyond Work-Life Balance and Finding the Flow. It will be on our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. Thank you to KP Whaley for producing this hour, and thanks to KP as well for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. Great conversations ahead. Thank you so much for listening.